The phrase I wanted you to remember is found in 14, 22, and 31, those verses in chapter 13, where Nehemiah is able to say, "Remember me, O my God," and he's talking about the good that he has done, and that's a challenge to us to be able to say the same thing. And in some instances, like he says in verse 29, "Remember them, O my God, because they have defiled." And so make sure that we can honestly be able to say to the Lord, "Lord, please remember me for the good." And it's kind of like almost an imprecatory prayer. "Lord, remember them for what they've done." One of the most corrupting influences on God's people is unholy alliances. That's a statement we made both the last 2 weeks. And so we're looking in this chapter at some violations of what Nehemiah had taught them the first time he had come to Jerusalem to rebuild the wall and had the help of the people. For 52 days they built the wall. They were successful. And then he had to go back to Shushan the palace in Babylon. And then he came back again to Jerusalem. And it's on that return trip when he comes back to Jerusalem here in chapter 13 that he sees that there are strangers in the congregation, there's strangers in the temple. These are people who, according to Deuteronomy chapter 23, were never to be allowed in the congregation, let alone the temple. And as you'll see in chapter 13, the first three verses, these were the Moabites and the Ammonites. They were not to be in the congregation. Well, in the temple, we saw that there was a traitor. And you wouldn't think it would be the high priest, but that's exactly who it was. Eliashib is in cahoots with an Ammonite, a man by the name of Tobiah. And it says in verse 4 that the high priest was allied unto Tobiah. I made the point last week that Eliashib had earlier been allied, at least in work, with Nehemiah. We went back to a previous chapter, I believe it was chapter 2 or chapter 3, where it says that, I think it was chapter 3, where Eliashib is helping build the wall with Nehemiah. And it was that alliance with Nehemiah that would make, you know, you would think if you're Nehemiah, this guy's with me. He's the high priest too. Surely he's with me on what I'm doing. And how many times you think that this guy is with you as a Christian, and then you find out more about them and you go, "Oh, what a disappointment. I thought he stood where we stood. I thought he stood where I stood. And now I find out he's allied with this guy." You can tell so much about people by who their alliances are with and who they're allied with. Folks, you can tell who people are by what church they go to. Okay? Just put it out there. You know so much about somebody by where they choose to go to church. And so, this guy says, "I'm going to go there," the single guy, "because they've got a lot of girls in that church." Well, ding dong, if those girls are choosing to go to that church, what do you think they're in that church for? Well, they're there to find a guy. Yeah, why don't you just go to a bar then? Why do you go to where such and such is so that you can then do right after that? Remember, if you're on the wrong path to get there, you think that they're going to come back to the right path with you? You've got to be careful. Alliances are tremendously important. So we looked at the traitor, we looked at the tithe. How that they had forsaken the house of God. In fact, Nehemiah asked in verse 11, "Why is the house of God forsaken?" Then we looked at violations regarding Sabbath. In his absence, Nehemiah found that the people had also become accustomed to ignoring the Sabbath laws. The Sabbath lost its distinctiveness and became as any other day. Got a lot of thoughts running through my mind right now. That's why I'm hesitating. Well, the men of Judah were guilty of it. They had violated the Sabbath. The men of Tyre aren't even God's children. They're not even God's people. Obviously, they're going to violate it. But it hadn't been so for a while. The men of Judah before would not let them do it. By the time Nehemiah gets back, the men of Judah are, you know, open market. Hey, everything's just the same. Let's do away with the blue laws, so to speak. And that's what they did. And so we read about this in verse 15. Let's just start with verse 15 and read on. In those days saw I in Judah some treading wine presses on the Sabbath and bringing in sheaves and lading asses, as also wine, grapes, and figs, and all manner of burdens, which they brought into Jerusalem on the Sabbath day, and I testified against them in the day wherein they sold victuals. There dwelt men of Tyre also therein, which brought fish and all manner of ware, and sold on the Sabbath unto the children of Judah and in Jerusalem. So here's what's interesting. Not only are these men allowed to sell, but the Jews are buying. So if you're going to buy, then it seems to endorse the selling. Verse 17, then I contended with the nobles of Judah and said unto them, what evil thing is this that ye do and profane the Sabbath day? Did not your fathers thus, and did not our God bring all this evil upon us and upon this city? Yet ye bring more wrath upon Israel by profaning the Sabbath. And it came to pass that when the gates of Jerusalem began to be dark before the Sabbath, I commanded that the gates should be shut and charged that they should not be opened till after the Sabbath. And some of my servants set I at the gates, that there should be no burden be brought in on the Sabbath day. So the merchants and sellers of all kind of ware lodged without Jerusalem once or twice. Then I testified against them and said unto them, why lodge ye about the wall? If ye do so again, I will lay hands on you. From that time forth, they came no more on the Sabbath. By the way, it was when he threatened to lay hands on them. And I commanded the Levites that they should cleanse themselves and that they should come and keep the gates to sanctify the Sabbath day. Do you think Nehemiah was right in this? Well, look what he says in the last part of verse 22. Remember me, O my God, concerning this also, and spare me according to the greatness of thy mercy. You know what? Nehemiah wouldn't even tolerate the presence of temptation for his people. Not even the presence of it. He got to the place where, you know, these guys, you're going to camp outside the gate and you're going to try to get in. We're going to lay hands on you. But when they shut the gates and he set his servants there to guard it, these guys got the message and said, okay, he's not even going to tolerate that we're even here. And so there's a good lesson to be learned there about how we should not even tolerate the presence of something that could allow us to go into sin. Now, I know this brings up the question of the Ten Commandments and the Sabbath and what that means for us today. And so I'm just going to end this little section by something that Dr. Marshall Neal, one of my professors at Bob Jones, once wrote, and here it is. Every one of the Ten Commandments is reaffirmed in the New Testament writings as binding upon Christians today, except the one concerning the Sabbath. The church still observes the principle of one day and seven to be devoted to the worship and service of God. But exactly what is permissible on the Lord's Day and what is not is not specified. But the church, when it is in spiritual health, must so live that Sunday is kept for spiritual things. Nothing should be allowed to interfere with our religious duties on this day. I think that's a very well-balanced and well-put on that regarding the Sabbath day. It's just so interesting that it seems like the direction of a nation goes with how the Lord's Day is treated. And ever since, I mean, you can trace it back to the 1960s when the Bibles were taken out of school, and then prayer was taken out of school, and people like to date it back to that. I don't know. Or people like to date it back to when, you know, man, when I was a kid, everything was closed on Sunday, except for restaurants or whatever. So what kind of questions does this bring up to you? What about going to a restaurant on Sunday? Juanita.
Somebody has to cook.
What about after church? We're going into the kitchen. And all the guys standing, of course, the guys are setting up the tables out here, but the ladies prepared. John R. Rice, years ago, he wrote in The Sword of the Lord, and this question came up in The Sword of the Lord. What about going to a restaurant on Sunday? And John R. Rice said something like this: do you turn your lights on Sunday? Well, that's just the light switch. No, no, no. Think about the people who are there at the power station making sure that everything is running. If everybody would just promise not to ever turn their lights on Sunday, don't use any air conditioning, then now you're starting to get a point, okay? What about, you know, all the things that we must have in order to live on a Sunday? And then he made the point, you men, you make your wives slave at home to get dinner ready while you sit there in your chair waiting for her to get the dinner. And then you don't help her with the dishes when it's done. So hey, if you're going to be consistent, don't even eat. Just rely upon the manna that fell on Saturday for you to have Sunday. Okay, Karen and then Paul.
I just wondered how much of this other church was really meant to be to renew our hearts before God.
I think it ought to be a day set. It is a day set aside. I think that's why the statement here, live that so that Sunday is kept for spiritual things. It is a day of rest. I don't like working on Sunday, but I do. You know? This really is not a day of rest for me, obviously. So I try to take Mondays off. So that's how, if you try to call me on Monday and I don't answer, I listen to all the messages in case there's an emergency. But, you know, people text me on Monday. I sometimes don't get to them until Tuesday unless it's an emergency. But every one of us needs a day. And God has given us a day to do so. There was a guy who would not run on Sunday in the Olympics. What was his name? Eric Little. And they even made a movie about it. He was actually a missionary to China. He had a promising career to go on as an athlete representing England, and he refused. He said, no, God has called me as a missionary to China. And he ran in that Olympics in the 1920s. He died in China in 1945 in prison, imprisoned by the Japanese. And that's where he died. Hudson Taylor, when he went to China as a missionary, insisted on Sundays not working and setting that day aside for the Lord. I know a lot of people who do the same thing, but they are very, very careful about Sundays. Brother Paul, you were going to say something earlier.
Society change over the decades, and I think
I don't know if I would say then we are have the right to change along with society. I would never want to change with society. I think we automatically do in response to what we see happening. And I think we always try to stay one step behind society, which is a really, I think, a wrong way to look at it. As long as I'm just behind them and not doing what they do, I just believe that we ought to make the day for spiritual things and for rest. The word Sabbath, remember, means rest. I don't know if you remember that from when we were going through the book of Exodus. It has to do with rest. And those nations that have tried to eliminate, have tried to have a seven-day work week, find out they become less productive. There's one chicken company that never works on Sunday, and they do very well in their business, Chick-fil-A. Not too much I can recommend about Chick-fil-A in some ways, but that's one thing I really respect is they've always said no Sundays, no work. And Hobby Lobby, the same thing. That's right. I think, you know, even if they're not all Christians, I think God has blessed them for that. Susan? Wow, interesting. Even now, today, you think? Or, wow. Switzerland. Yep. Claudia? Right. Right. That's right. And Jesus is making the point that the man was not made for the Sabbath. The Sabbath was made for man, which means that the Sabbath is a gift. If you don't treat that gift as a gift and you violate the gift, you're not accepting it as the gift. Here's the problem with that animal falling into the ditch. Why does it keep falling in the ditch on Sunday? Why does that happen? Yeah, because people who use that as an excuse are constantly, you know, something's not right here. Well, you know, I just forgot to leave the fence locked. Well, yeah. Karen? Alan, go ahead. He lost it. I bet you he would have won it if he was a Muslim and wouldn't work on Friday.
I believe the court ruled against him. I may have gone to the Supreme Court, but he lost.
Wow. Interesting. I hadn't heard about that, but I believe it. Karen? Yeah. I mean, you've got the. It's like policemen. You know, make sure policemen aren't working on Sunday. Yeah, that'd be nice if there weren't any criminals, and so forth. But yeah, on the farm, you know, I still had to get up in the mornings and go feed and water the ducks and the geese and the chickens and put the grain out for the cattle and the hogs, and all the hogs had to be, you know, slopped on Sunday as well. Because they never observe the Sabbath for some reason.
Just to go along those lines, kind of chop together. He was, I do remember one year where we had a lot of rain, and we were behind getting things planted because everything was so muddy in the morning. And finally, it was starting to dry up, and suddenly we were irrigating the plant.
Still wouldn't do it. Wow. Yep. Larry. Okay, that's violations regarding the Sabbath. Then violations regarding spouses. This is really kind of an interesting conclusion to the book of Nehemiah. Let's start with verse 23. In those days also I saw Jews that had married wives of Ashdod, of Ammon, and of Moab. So these Moabites and these Ammonites are a lot of problem. And their children spake half in the speech of Ashdod and could not speak in the Jews' language, but according to the language of each people. And I contended with them. Man, Nehemiah's contentious, isn't he? And cursed them. That's not using God's name in vain. And smote certain of them and plucked off their hair. We think this is referring to the beards of the men. And made them swear by God, saying, ye shall not give your daughters unto their sons, nor take their daughters unto your sons or for yourselves. Did not Solomon, king of Israel, sin by these things? Yet among many nations was there no king like him who was beloved of his God, and God made him king over all Israel. Nevertheless, even him did outlandish women cause to sin. Shall we then hearken unto you to do all this great evil, to transgress our God and marrying strange wives? And one of the sons of Jehoiada, the son of Eliashib the high priest, was son-in-law to Sanballat the Horonite. Therefore I chased him from me. Remember Sanballat? Remember them, O my God, because they have defiled the priesthood and the covenant of the priesthood and of the Levites. Thus cleansed I them from all strangers and appointed the wards of the priests and the Levites, every one in his business, and for the wood offering at times appointed, and for the first fruits. Remember me, O my God, for good. Some were marrying those they were not supposed to marry. Now, the Jew was always, always to marry another Jew. But you've got some exceptions. You've got Rahab. And she's in the line of Christ. And you've got Ruth. Ruth was a Moabite, but truly converted. Could somebody be proselytized into the Jewish faith? Yeah. But these Moabites, these Ammonites? Not generally. You know, I've had men tell me in this community that if it weren't for their wife, they would be here at Westside. You would know some of them. They've never joined. But they love this church. But they said it was because of their wives. And you know what it was? What it was about their wives that kept them from coming here? The friendships that they had in their other church. First one. I'm going to make another statement here. A lot of the people who have left our church have left because of a spouse. The influence of a spouse. In many cases, it's because of a wife, but in other cases, it's because of the husband. Where the wife did not want to go, but the husband did. Other cases where the husband wanted to stay, but the wife wanted to go. Something else I've observed down through the years. I mean, we've been here 27 years now. And I have observed that in some cases, when the little kids who grew up in this church become teenagers, the parents gravitate toward what the kids want. And they choose their church based upon what their kids now want. I could name the names for you. Do you see what happens? And in those cases, it was always a spousal situation that was questionable, where they allowed undue influence from the spouse, which shows that they were truly influenced by something other than the Word of God. And then when their kids grow up to a certain age, then they're influenced by the kids. Now, I know you're all thinking, who was that? Who was that? Who was that? Well, you just keep thinking, because I'm not going to tell you. When it came to observing the Sabbath, Nehemiah had to remind the people of their history. You remember he said, you know, this is happening because of history. Now he appeals to history again, to Solomon. And so he goes back in history and does this with spouses and reminds them in verse 26 of what caused Solomon's downfall. Can you think of any other kings where a spouse was the downfall of that king? A wife was the downfall of that king. Can you name any famous or infamous wives, Jerry?
Jezebel.
Go to 1 Kings 16. Verse 29, and in the 38th year of Asa, king of Judah, began Ahab, the son of Omri, to reign over Israel. And Ahab, the son of Omri, reigned over Israel in Samaria 22 years. And Ahab, the son of Omri, did evil in the sight of the Lord above all that were before him. And it came to pass, as if it had been a light thing for him to walk in the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, that he took to wife Jezebel, the daughter of Ethbaal, king of the Zidonians, and went and served Baal and worshipped him. In other words, it wasn't bad enough. He made it worse. He married Jezebel. So that's who influenced Ahab. A bad king already. I mean, he's already on the wrong path. No wonder he ends up with somebody like Jezebel. Then, you saw Asa there? Did you see Asa? Who followed Asa as king of the southern kingdom? Does anybody know who followed Asa? Just kind of search through there, go into chapter, okay, is it chapter 17? Where do you see who follows him? It might be easier if you go to 2 Chronicles 21. In fact, go back to chapter 20. Go back to chapter 18. I'm just doing this along with you. Go back to chapter 14. And there you've got Asa there. That's where he's mentioned. And then you go to chapter 16. Hanani rebukes Asa. And so you see that Asa dies at the end of chapter 16, and you get to chapter 17 and verse 1, and Jehoshaphat, his son, reigned in his stead. So who follows Asa? Jehoshaphat. Now, I always like to ask, is this king good or bad? Was Asa good or bad? Good. Was Jehoshaphat good or bad? He's good. But you know what? Jehoshaphat had a problem with alliances. You see, he was good friends with Ahab. Really? Yeah. He was friends with Ahab. And then Jehoshaphat had a son who became king. His name was Jehoram. Horrible king. And Jehoram married somebody as a result of his father's alliances. So Jehoshaphat is good friends with Ahab. Ahab and Jezebel have a daughter. Her name is Athaliah. Here you've got Asa has a son, Jehoshaphat, good friends with Ahab, hangs around Ahab. He's got the son Jehoram. They've got a daughter named Athaliah. Now you've got a marriage. Athaliah, good queen or bad? Horrible, vile is what she was. Well, This is now starting to influence the southern kingdom of Judah because of an alliance that Jehoshaphat had made years earlier that now his son is involved in. So why did Jehoram marry the daughter of Ahab? Because of his father Jehoshaphat, a relatively good king, had alliances with Ahab. Look at chapter 18 of 2 Chronicles. Look at verse 1. Jehoshaphat had riches and honor and abundance and joined affinity with Ahab. I made reference to this last Sunday in my afternoon sermon. But then, chapter 19 and verse 2. Jehu, the son of Hanani the seer, went out to meet him. That is Jehoshaphat, and said to King Jehoshaphat, shouldest thou help the ungodly and love them that hate the Lord? Therefore is wrath upon thee from before the Lord. Nevertheless, there are good things found in thee. So that's why we look at King Jehoshaphat as a good king. Note the evil impact that Athaliah, who married Jehoram, has on their son Ahaziah, chapter 22, verses 2 to 4. 42 years old was Ahaziah when he began to reign. And he reigned 1 year in Jerusalem. His mother's name also was Athaliah, the daughter of Omri. He also walked in the ways of Ahab. Why? For his mother was his counselor to do wickedly. Wherefore he did evil in the sight of the Lord, like the house of Ahab. For they were his counselors after the death of his father to his destruction. So this unholy alliance that took place between Jehoshaphat and Ahab continues and continues and continues. Look at chapter 22 and I'll get to you in a second. Look at chapter 22 and verse 10. When Athaliah, the mother of Ahaziah, saw that her son was dead, she arose and destroyed all the seed royal of the house of Judah. She then kills probably the sons of the other wives of the king, so that there's no one who can take over. And they hide one. His name is Joash. And there's another whole history here. But the whole point is this. You have an unholy alliance that starts way back with Jehoshaphat. And look at the lasting impact that that has. Brother Paul?
There were two women by the name of Athaliah then, weren't there?
That's, as far as I know, just one, but it does get confusing. Read through it. Yeah, I don't want to get into that. I just want you to leave. I don't want to get into the semantics of that. I want you to know that Athaliah, whether she was the wife, the daughter, anyone named Athaliah was bad, and you had this horrible situation with them because of what she did. So I want to make sure you catch on to that. And maybe you can study and let me know. I don't want to get into that, but if you don't mind studying that would let me know about that. Because I've looked at the same thing. So the chapter, going back to Nehemiah, ends with Nehemiah's prayer in verse 31. And he is asking to be remembered when he stands before God to give an account of his works, and he wants to hear, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant." And somebody wrote this: what will we hear in that day, condemnation or commendation? We will be more careful of unholy alliances when we put this life's work into perspective with having to give an account one day. In the meantime, don't be surprised when alliances take place of others based upon the alliances you've had. It has to stop somewhere. So it doesn't have to continue with you. It doesn't have to continue. You can stop it by making sure that you're right with the Lord. Even unholy alliances that have taken place, if it's a marriage, you can't break it off. But you've got to do what the Bible commands on how to handle that marriage. 1 Peter chapter 3. I had more slides and didn't even look at them. That takes us to the end. Questions or comments as we close today?